This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
We just heard the boom blast, the sound of the big blast, you see that. So all the roofs were coming down. So it was a matter of just running for your life.
Terrible. A lot of blood, children looking for the parents, parents looking for the children, and fire all over. Our security is not for terror attacks.
Two witnesses from Thursday's suicide bombing of a hotel in Mombasa, Kenya. That blast killed at least 13 people, including three Israelis. It wounded at least 80 more people. Only a few minutes earlier, two shoulder-launched anti-aircraft missiles were fired by someone at an Israeli passenger jet that was taking off from Mombasa for Tel Aviv. Those missiles missed. And later on Thursday, in an event that may or may not be directly related, six Israelis were killed in an attack at the local headquarters of the Likud party in Beit Shean, Israel. Dan Shore joins us. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Scott.
Let's, of course, first turn to the attack in Mombasa, Kenya.
Yes.
Does this, the use of two, near as we can tell, shoulder-launched surface-to-air missiles, represent a new threat in the world?
It certainly represents a new phase, a new stage in the terrorist war around the globe. You know, the government has been very worried for a long time about whether some of the Stinger missiles that were given to the Mujahideen in Afghanistan way back then, and which were not returned, whether one of those days an American Stinger would be launched against an American plane in the sky. Well, these are two ground-to-air missiles, I don't believe they are Stingers, launched against Israeli planes. Now, if this is the Al-Qaeda, then it means they're expanding their war from the United States to include Israel. Mm-hmm. If it isn't Al-Qaeda, it does seem to represent some new phase of the war that was going on between the Palestinians and the Israelis, but which was happening there in Israel, in the West Bank, now is apparently moving to even to Africa.
American officials had hoped at some point that even if they felt Iraq couldn't be contained, that the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians might be contained, and therefore if there was an incursion against Iraq, that wouldn't necessarily catch up that region.
That's right. You remember that President Bush at one point spoke of terrorism that the United States was going to oppose as terrorism with global reach. And I think in doing that, he was trying to make a distinction between the Al-Qaeda, which crossed borders, and such things as civil wars in Sri Lanka and countries like that, and apparently would rather not, if he could avoid it, include the fight between the Israelis and the Palestinians in the global war against terrorism. That's becoming increasingly difficult to do if you begin going after Israelis in Africa.
This week, some of the names of people who will be making important decisions in the lives of all Americans were announced. Gordon England, who's now Secretary of the Navy, will apparently join now Secretary Ridge in the new Department of Homeland Security. Asa Hutchinson will be appointed to Border and Transportation Security. Clay Johnson from the White House Personnel Office will head the transition team between the two agencies. A man named Michael Garcia, who's now at Commerce, will be the new Immigration Commissioner. However, perhaps the most interesting personnel choice of all week is a name that needs no introduction for our audience, and certainly not to you. Henry Kissinger.
Henry Kissinger, yes.
Has been tapped to head the panel.
Henry is back.
To inquire as to the state of U.S. intelligence at the time of the September 11th, 2001 attacks. George Mitchell of Maine, former senator, Democrat, will be his co-chair.
Well, Henry Kissinger always plays a fascinating role, and it always has to do with his control of information and the way in which he wants to deploy information, a little of it most of the time, in order to accomplish what he wants to accomplish. This is a commission that the Bush administration ardently opposed for a very long time, until they found that the pressure of the families, which demanded an independent inquiry, not just simply the one that was going on with two congressional intelligence committees. And finally, the administration decided to submit to that. But with that went a very pressing fear. You will remember that early on, after 9/11, word came out that President Bush had been told in a CIA briefing of the possibility that Al-Qaeda might hijack a passenger plane. And there was a spurt of stories saying, how come the president didn't know, and so on. A little unfair, because it didn't give you enough information to be able to make the judgment. But I think that the Bush administration is desperately anxious that this investigation not come back into the lap of the Bush administration. Now, if you want to control an investigation well and make sure that nothing bad happens to you, nothing like Henry Kissinger. He had, in fact, once before headed a presidential commission of President Reagan, who didn't have much use for him because of détente with Russia and so on, finally gave him a job to do, which was to head a commission inquiring into what was going on in Central America, El Salvador and Nicaragua and so on. Made a six-day sweeping tour, came back, and wrote a big report in which he said, in effect, that Reagan is doing a great job of resisting the Soviets and the Cubans in Central America. So if you want to have an investigating commission that's going to find out why information wasn't exchanged when it should have been exchanged, you're dealing with a person here who's an expert on not exchanging information.
Is that the purpose of the commission, though?
Well, the purpose of the commission was, if you followed the families who had demanded it so insistently, the purpose was to find how could this have happened and how do we make sure or try to make sure that it doesn't happen again. This, however, was not really going so much into the past. It was very interesting that in appointing the commission, appointing first Kissinger and then George Mitchell, Democratic vice chairman, what he said was the commission will help me and future presidents understand the nature of the threats that we face. It was as though to say, we want to learn about the enemy, and he wants to shift attention from what went wrong with us to learning more about the enemy.
Mm-hmm. The UN inspectors began work in and around the Baghdad area this week. So far, no obstruction on behalf of Iraqi officials. Also, so far, no discoveries that we know anything about. How do you read the events so far?
Well, it's gone on for a few days, and it's gone about as expected. Saddam Hussein said we'll cooperate, and so far there seems to have been great cooperation, more than the inspectors seem to want. For example, they issued 100 passes to the press to come and go see everything, but the monitors didn't want them while they were doing their inspections. I don't think this is a very important. This is more a rehearsal for what comes next. Nobody expects that these visits to widely advertised places, which may in the past at some point have had some kind of weapons activity, that they'll find anything now. I think what they're really doing is leading up to December 8th, by which time Iraq is supposed to make a complete declaration of everything potential and actual and in the way of terrorist weapons, and then I think this really starts. I think this is going to go more or less without incident from now until beginning of December.
Washington Post ran a piece this week that suggested that we're just beginning to discover some features in the backgrounds of some of the UN inspectors, and they might not be a group of rigorous preparation.
Well, if the Washington Post is to be believed in what looks like a very comprehensive story on the subject, first of all, it appears that the Iraqis were given a say-so in who would be on the inspector's commission. But I think the most important element of this is that this was supposed to be a very aggressive commission, operate exactly unfettered as it wanted, and yet unlike the previous UNSCOM group, where you had people who were lent by their governments for the purpose, these people have to leave government jobs in order to do this. And a lot of highly qualified people are not going to give up permanent jobs for a temporary job. So the question is, do they have the best people?
Thanks very much, Dan Shore.